In the Spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines. Only on SAFM.
So in the Spotlight, we go. So fascinating discussion we had earlier on. There's a couple more people like Cyber Jazby tweeting as well. Can't quite answer that right away, but certainly have made a note of your thoughts. My guest now, who's in the Spotlight, is Professor Ian Zanay, who's the CEO of the Right to Care, also the founder of that ATM pharmacy that we've been fussing about all of last week. And there's a whole lot more. I'm looking at your CV. We could have a half an hour chat just with you rattling off all the things you're involved in. I'm impressed. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's an honor to be here.
Thank you. And perhaps let's start with that. You know, because you're involved in many organizations, three or four significant things you're involved in right now besides the two I've just mentioned.
So I'm an infectious diseases specialist, but I chose to go the path less traveled. And as I was qualifying, initiated a HIV research unit. At that time, in fact, I was interested in alternative medicines, integrative medicine, and started out with a homeopathy study, actually, in HIV, but rapidly built a very strong unit and that has worked in the development of most of the drugs that we know today. I then went on to identify that health economics was going to be the definition of how health finance was going to work. And together with Boston University, initiated the Health Economics and Epidemiology Research Office that today works with the Department of Health and Treasury on the how to finance the response to HIV and how to finance TB diagnosis and treatment, etc. And now more recently, some NHI work. Then we decided to roll out treatment and initiated a non-profit group called Right to Care, which has grown in part because of the HIV epidemic and in part in the early years because of the lack of the response under Thabo Mbeki to the HIV epidemic. We were put into the position of receiving substantive grant funding and work with USAID and PEPFAR in the main, but also our prime recipient of Global Fund, have a number of contracts with the Department of Health. And in the last 2 years, I've actually moved, because of the success of the South African program, moved to provide technical assistance in 16 countries outside South Africa, again with a grant provided by USAID. And that reaches as far afield as Myanmar.
Okay, wow.
Ukraine, a number of African countries, and then Haiti on the west side together in a consortium.
Anything else you do? Just checking.
So my hobby is horses. And there we're actually, I'm trying to help Pretoria University to develop an HIV, a vaccine for African horse sickness. And we're actually making progress there too.
Okay, now, you know, the obvious thing, when speaking to other people who are growing up, is like, be focused, decide, choose one or two things and just stay like that. You appear to have made a mark in all the things you've mentioned, but it must chip away at your time. How are you managing to do that?
So the time is my enemy, but I have, because of the nature of a non-profit group, we have been able to attract extremely interesting and solid leadership in a variety of areas. And there's no one person that can do all of this. It does require a vision, but indeed it would be impossible to do this without all the talent that has been attracted. So this is talent that would normally go to the private sector, but most are in fact extremely engaged because of the way that Right to Care is set up in terms of its initiative being very much, it's not a soup kitchen, it's a very big organization today. And so, in fact, they see the business principles, but very much social initiative to gain the trust of internally and gain the trust of the Department of Health and, most importantly, the trust of patients.
Okay, who's taken the time out to listen to you today?
I don't know. I mean, I've kept relatively quiet. I mean, I think my family is probably at home because it is school holidays. Of course. They probably are listening. And without them, it would be impossible to do this task.
Of course. Well, family and anybody else, friends as well, you are more than welcome to call in. Because today, it really is about tracking the history and the impact, in this case, of your dad, your friend, your colleague, Professor Ian Zane, and what he's done. So 0891-104207. So what we always like is if people are up to it, just, you know, call in, compliment, share anecdotes if you can. I certainly welcome that all of the time. So 0891-104207. SMS is 40938. And tweets, we welcome for that as well. Hashtag Afternoon Talk when you do tweet. And tweets to, two Twitter handles. My personal one, Ashraf Garda, as well as to the SAFM radio Twitter handle. So let's then talk about this right to care. Tell me more about that, because I mean, I suppose if you were not involved in the NGO space, then you could well just be another hardworking doctor. Am I right?
Yeah. So I think the recognition of the HIV epidemic came during my exam period as a physician, and in those days we had small numbers coming through the Johannesburg Hospital. It was clear that this epidemic was going to explode. And there was, you know, the initiation of antiretroviral therapy. The first AZT trials were coming through and all the emotion that went with access to AZT. And so I could predict that this was going to be a big thing. And when I wanted to do my immunomodulator studies, the clinic lead said, well, he's actually not interested because he's leaving. And the head of medicine said, you know, why do you want to go into HIV treatment? Because it's only for, you know, gay doctors, it's a career road to nowhere. And I said, you know, this is nonsense. And so, as I qualified, I took over the HIV clinic.
Were you able to convince
Hospital.
Them when you said this is nonsense? Were you able to convince them otherwise, or you just agreed to disagree?
I just did it. Yeah. I just took over the HIV clinic. They wanted somebody to take it over and be responsible. I had a government post at that time. To the detriment of the Department of Health folks who ran that hospital at the time, they actually eventually asked me to stop prescribing antiretroviral therapy because it was against government policy. This was at the time of Thabo Mbeki. And I said, you know, nonsense, right? So either I took a piece of paper off the desk of the superintendent and wrote my resignation letter, and I said, either you withdraw what you've just said, or here's my resignation letter. And I broke out and...
Did he take the resignation?
He took the resignation. Okay. And I broke out and started a self-funded research unit. I still ran the HIV clinic for pro bono. So I went back and did it for free.
Okay.
But in principle, still prescribed the antiretroviral therapy regimens that we had at the time, which was really only AZT, 3TC. It was dual combination treatment. It was inadequate. And built the research unit. And then I think the pathway is just one led to the other. The epidemic is massive. 6 million people that need to be treated. And today, you know, going into the pharmacy and taking a look at the stock levels that are delivered once a week, we would have dreamt to have any of those kinds of drugs available.
Even at a hospital. Yeah.
Wow. So today, now, you know, we get a weekly delivery of almost half a truckload full of antiretroviral therapy at Hill & Joseph, and we dispense that. And it's amazing. And it's the most gratifying disease to treat, important to diagnose. And people who come, even when they are ill, you know, have a turnaround within 2-3 months with successful treatment that brings them back to work, brings them back into the realms of their families. There is no other disease that I know that shows such a quick turnaround. Since then, we've had, you know, downstream developments, and for the first time, hepatitis C is not a big issue in South Africa. Luckily, we don't have much intravenous drug use here. But in Myanmar and in Ukraine, I had to learn about hepatitis C they asked us to provide technical assistance. And the spin-off of HIV treatment is that we have cure treatment for hepatitis C.
Okay. Wow.
And so 12 weeks of treatment at a cost of $60,000 in the US, we've managed to negotiate down to $600 for the full course of treatment in Myanmar and Ukraine. And that's curative. So, you know, the field of HIV has been fascinating. Couldn't be the virology as a treatment option couldn't have been a faster evolving field. It's been the fastest evolving field.
But under force too, isn't it?
A force, but also the technology and the targets and the science of it, which has been absolutely fascinating. So the clinical research unit has published probably over the last 10 years over 440 publications. We have the highest publication rate in the university, at Wits University. And we are involved in major international trials. We receive substantive funding to actually conduct those under FDA and MCC rules. And, you know, it's that part has been absolutely fascinating. And it still is my first passion. The evolution into right to care has been to drive the access to treatment. And with, you know, eventually Thabo Mbeki's decision to roll out treatment and the PEPFAR support for that, we have grown to be quite possibly, I would think, one of the top 10 NGOs in South Africa.
And what sort of impact does right to care make then? How do you measure that?
So we are, we measure on patient numbers eventually. In South Africa, we are responsible for the support in three provinces. Over time, we have initiated or supported the initiation. I think one must emphasize that government today pays more than 85% of the cost.
Yeah,
so
okay.
It's not like we're the owners of this. The Department of Health owns this. But we have supported the treatment initiation of over 480,000 patients on treatment. Now, that, to put that in perspective, the entire United States probably today treats around 700,000 patients.
Yeah. Wow.
And so South Africa, with 4.2 million people initiated on treatment, is by far the largest treatment program in the world.
We are chatting, I am putting in the spotlight, certainly Professor Ian Zane, who is the CEO of the Right to Care, amongst many other things. We'll talk about that ATM hospital, just a chemist or pharmacy, just in a moment or so. Welcome your thoughts. SMS is 40938. Otherwise, as always, you can tweet hashtag afternoon talk, but you know you can call in to 0891-104207. Just quick one, I'm going to move away from HIV. Lessons to learn in terms of that Thabo Mbeki era to the Zuma administration and where we are now in terms of South Africa treating, managing the issue of HIV?
So each has had its complexities. So I think that the Thabo Mbeki era was, in terms of leadership, in terms of civil society leadership, it was galvanizing because in essence, there was no scientific basis to very poor political decision-making. And we were, you know, on gazillion TV stations and radio stations. The last time I was here in this studio, we had a debate on alternative views.
Okay.
And I think that, in fact, it really gave us an energy to stand up and fight something. And when President Zuma came to power, it almost deflated us because he then said, no, he totally agrees with HIV.
Well, he was with you in that sense, yeah?
Yeah, he deflated that momentum that we had. We almost felt like we didn't have a reason to go to work. But in fact, what we then did is built a major response program. Mm. And I think the pity about the Zuma era has been that the health finance part of this has been undermined, like everything else in the country, by the weakening economy. Where our neighbor countries, which I travel to often now, providing technical assistance, have got growth rates of 8 to 12%.
Yeah.
You know, we're fiddling around with trying to keep our head above water. And that's almost like another reason why the health system has really taken a big knock over the last 8 years. No investment, no capital investment. Very poor staffing ratios.
That impacts on the healthcare we receive.
Right? Absolutely. I think since 1994, the population's almost doubled, yet the subsidies to universities have not increased, and therefore the medical student output hasn't increased. The number of hospitals have actually gone down. The SCDMing chaos that occurred was to try and save budget. You know, that was the motivation. That was, you know, it was an outsourced contract that was working, but in fact they were trying to save money. They did that with TB.
Is that symptomatic of many others we don't even know about?
Well, they did that with TB hospitals, a decade ago, with also very poor results. They pushed TB back into the main hospitals, and there's an overwhelming bed shortage in the public sector. So why would you want to actually have chronic TB patients? There's this drive to move MDR, drug-resistant TB treatment, into community settings. Why? We've actually got TB
maybe
hospitals.
Maybe that conversation with the Minister of Health is something you've probably had, but maybe you need to have another one very, very soon. Our guest, Professor Ian Zane, the CEO of Right to Care, amongst many other things. We'll talk about that newly launched pharmacy with a difference in a moment.
In the Spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines. Only on SAFM.
Always welcoming calls, and you certainly can call in. Jay's calling in from Durban. Jay, hi.
Hi, yes, Ashraf. Yes. Good afternoon to you and our professor. And congratulations to you, Ashraf. You bring the most fantastic people on air and topics to discuss.
Well, I can't take all the credit. It's absolute teamwork, just so that you know that, okay? But
of
thank
course.
You. Appreciate
you, you
it.
Must have, we must have a good leader, not a ruler, like we had the past president. And he wanted to rule and not lead and govern the people.
All right. I'm sure but you want to talk to the guest. Go ahead and talk to him, yes.
Professor, I am so really, really thank you for your perseverance. And that's what God has ordained you to do, have perseverance and really prove your point. Now, I will say, for you to be compensated for your research and for all the losses and things like that, every minister who collected a high salary and bonuses and all that, they must get it out of them and pour it into your research work. Because it is such a sad story to hear thousands and thousands of lives were wasted and really didn't get the honor and privilege to live a full, fruitful life. But what the government has done...
Okay, can we leave it at that? Yeah, can we leave it at that? I think you've made your point, Jay. Thanks for that call. Yeah. Okay, welcome for the calls in a moment, right? Okay, let's just sort that out. We'll get to play a song just now. Let's tell me about that. You may want to respond to the caller.
Yeah, no, I do think that wasted resources frustrates us. I think the South African government is trying to move to increasing the investment in science through the Department of Science and Technology and the MRC, and have done some very good agreements with international donors with co-funding from the South African government. But the levels of funding we use are not available in South Africa. So, the kinds of grants that we apply for go into hundreds of millions of dollars.
Because you mentioned UNAIDS in terms of support, right?
So UNAIDS, no direct for us, but UNAIDS does provide some support. The annual investment from a global fund is in excess of $300 million a year. The investment from PEPFAR is in excess of $600 million a year. Those are really big sums of money. But South African government is trying to shift their emphasis.
Well, I'm very curious to know about your own journey and where it all started. We'll do that, not quite now, just now. Time to play a song, however, that you choose. And you've chosen a Hugh Masekela song, which is very, very topical. Tell me about the song and why.
So I actually came in contact for the first time when the president provided, the words in his speech.
The context it all is.
And I've actually played it, many times over. And in fact, it's a motto within our group. So
happened in the last month or so?
Absolutely. Well, so it's become one of the favorite songs
okay,
now.
Okay, top of the hit parade, obviously, Tumamina, or Send Me, as per you, Masekela. Yeah, it is. Well, there we are. Send Me, Tumamina, certainly says so many things. And you live up to that? I mean, you embrace that as an attitude to life?
I mean, I certainly would like to help the underprivileged, the downtrodden, the I have a positive attitude to the alcoholic, to the drug addict. I do think that the entire organization is focused on the send me. It's focused on responsiveness,
Without even being titled that. Yeah. Right. There's a couple of comments. So Professor Ian is one of our South African heroes. I worked for the Right to Care, and he has a vision on our health. I'm sure one day he will be back to complete his, dream with Right to Care from Sibo Siso in Durban. You may know that name, right? Does the prof know about Umklingo juice? Let me spell it out. U-M-L-I-N-G-O juice. Can it treat AIDS from LIDS in Cape Town?
I doubt it. Okay. It may be used as a benefit. So I do have an integrative medicine ideal. I think it could potentially benefit the well-being of the person, but we would really like people to be on antiretroviral therapy. That really works. Prize, right? And okay. I have done a number of studies with alternatives, but antiretroviral therapy
there's
works.
In fact, there's a couple more. I'll read that in just a minute. Let's get the news headlines now. It's 2:30. 3:30, in fact.
There are some conversations you simply shouldn't miss. Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda on SAFM.
My guest is Professor Ian Zane, who's the, spelled with an S, okay, S-A-N-N-E, CEO of the Right to Care, amongst many other things, of course, very much an HIV/AIDS activist, I would think, in the medical space. Question, ask your guest, is it true that there is American AIDS and African AIDS? One could be negative or positive. One could be negative or positive, depending on where he is tested. Fascinating.
So there are some complexities around testing, but by the main, in the main, there are subtype differences, but all of them are tested the same by the testing methods that we have and respond to treatment the same. We actually get some better responses to treatment in South Africa rather than in the United States. There is HIV-2 or HTLV-2, which in fact does cause a similar disease that our testing methods may miss, but in fact the downstream testings do.
And I check it. I think I'm sure I checked.
That's a West African.
West African. I chatted to Professor Helen Rees, I think, a while back. And is it true to say that out of the adversity, South Africa's is up there with the highest standards with regard to HIV/AIDS?
Absolutely. So what's interesting is we were a fast follower. So we didn't actually go through that monotherapy, dual therapy era. We actually came to the treatment program with triple therapy, and therefore I've got less patients that have moved from first to second line and second line to third line or failure regimens. And so, the standards are very high. The clinics can do this. We've fixed those combinations. I published a paper that said that nurses are just as good as doctors to, in fact, provide treatment. It was a randomized trial. Based on that, the WHO recommendations came out that we can shift treatment to primary health care. It is really important for people to test. It's really important for those positive to come forward for treatment. Really important to start treatment and stay on it, and that message is needs to be consistently given. And then life expectancy normalizes. It's normalizing so much so that I have tried for 3 years to persuade our board to make a life insurance company, because I think that at the moment people don't receive life insurance because of their HIV status. But indeed, we've got the data to show that life expectancy is normalized.
It's pretty high. So it's normalized, as you say. That's very important. Let's then talk about the other project that you're involved in, the fairly new one. So what do we call it? The ATM pharmacy.
So we call it a patient dispensing unit. The principle is the front window looks like an ATM, and that's why everybody's cottoned onto the pharmacy.
Did you
ATM
call it
pharmacy.
That?
No, we didn't. We called it a patient dispensing unit. Yeah. So we had huge queues at the Helen Joseph Hospital pharmacy opening at 6 o'clock in the morning, not managing to dispense enough treatment, waiting times on average of more than 4 hours.
Yeah. Wow.
People starting at 3 o'clock in the morning, waiting in a long queue in the hospital. And Alan, not Craig, actually planted the seed, because he was on our board at the time, and he took us to the automation center at Vodacom. And from that, we pieced together. So it was our idea to automate a pharmacy, and we pieced technology together plus the cloud, the software that's required to the point where we have focused on the public sector. We have now launched the PDUs, these ATMs. The first was at Alex. It was it's an incredibly gratifying experience to see the patients come on their way to work, public sector patients, and walk in, show their ATM card to the machine, type in their PIN number. If they wish to converse with a pharmacist, they can.
And via that machine? So
via a Skype link.
Okay.
The pharmacist sees the script. They can describe any symptoms they have.
So they are in a pharmacy, in effect?
So there's actually responsible pharmacists in every one of our sites. But the important part is that they leave with the correct medicines labeled according to their need for 1, 2, or 3 months dispensing. It is not only for HIV, it is for all chronic diseases. And at the moment, the clinic referral system is sending us patients. And the Alex is now up and running. It's out the incubator and it's now performing properly. 4,800 patients dispensed, over 18,000 scripts dispensed.
And this is just in the last few?
In the last few months. Yeah, so we're ramping up. Now what we're trying to do is track the patients to come to the PDUs instead of going to the clinics. They need to be referred by the clinics.
And the stock, I mean, just explain that. So an ATM needs to have money put into that machine before it can be
withdrawn. So behind what people are seeing as the front window is robotics instrumentation. It's German technology. We are working with the CSIR to do certain adaptations to that technology. But in principle, there's a big robotic center behind it and a full pharmacy behind it. And we have two sites in Soweto that are ready and up and running now. Deep Slurt will be online within the next month or so. And then we have two sites in the Free State around Bloemfontein. That's actually funded by the Global Fund.
Okay.
And the Free State government is being, you know, very cooperative. Gauteng was fantastic. The MEC was at our launch, and so we think that this technology will, each site can deal probably with around 30,000 patients.
Okay. Now there has been one or two people. I probably emceed some entrepreneurial awards, and there's been entrepreneurs who've sort of worked a way around, you know, the issue of dispensing, either from actual delivery, so not sort of automated. And there's been some automated trial. I can't remember the names. You know much about that and how this differs?
So we have 4 offerings. We've actually automated the entire Helen Joseph Hospital Pharmacy and the entire Steve Biko Pharmacy. We've brought waiting times down in those hospitals to less than 20 minutes. We in these ATMs, the actual dispense, the waiting, there are no waiting times, and the dispense is less than 3 minutes. The third offering is courier medicine. So
yes,
lots of automation, send it to a pickup point with adherence clubs, for example. And that one we're actually going to test in Zambia, so in Dola District in Zambia. And the fourth one, which is quite interesting, is cabinets. So I met Mark Barnes at the airport the other day.
From the post office.
And I had a brief discussion with him. And I am sort of hoping that we can do a deal together to have pickup locations where SMS is sent to your phone. You go up to the lockers. You type in the PIN number. It tells you in locker B1 is your medicine. You open up and collect your medicine.
And of course, needing to become more relevant and finding ways to do that. So it seems to be a win-win with me. Tell me about your story then. You know, where do you come from?
I was born here in Johannesburg. I went to government education, protected beneficial education at that time. I only really woke up to what was going on in South Africa when I hit WITS at medical school.
Which school did you go to? Like
Bryanston High School.
Okay.
And I went to WITS at the age of 17 and caught a wake up there.
What sort of wake up?
It was a political wake up. I mean, I think WITS was in the throes, you know, we're speaking about 1984, 85. It was the deep resistance time period. Mm-hmm. My father was in German industry, had a big influence on me, as did my mother. We had lots of discussions at home. He was eventually chairman of the South African German Chamber of Commerce at the time of the 90 to 94 period. And so we were privileged as children to meet Cyril Ramaphosa and others, you know, the negotiating team, Thabo Mbeki at the time. And we had a very, very interesting upbringing. We then went on to, in the medical school arena, you know, the politics of the day. I qualified in 1990. I remember 89 when Nelson Mandela was released. We were astounded.
Mm. And your choice of getting into the medical space?
I wanted to be a vet. Pretoria University didn't take me, and I think it was probably quite good for me that I didn't become a vet.
Okay. So it would have been vet in Pretoria versus medical doctor
at Wits.
At Wits. And there was a social change as well.
And you know that I didn't even have such a brilliant matric, so I got in on an interview. I remember the interview as well. In fact, one of them was Professor Cleeton Jones, who recently retired as the ethics chair, and I've been on the ethics committee for the last 15 years at the university. So I got in. I was lucky. I had a guardian angel, I think.
Why do you think you've succeeded overall?
I think I have a good business mind that I inherited from my father, with a very strong social imperative, and really was able to take the soft-funded model and move it forward, both in research and then in the NGO environment. I could not have done this without my family. I think my wife is very tolerant of me being away for 2 weeks a month, and keeps everything else together. My daughter's just started medical school, so she just finished.
Okay, there you are. So again, if people ask you, just like I needed one piece of advice not in the medical field, just in any field, for a person to be successful, and they'll often say, Ashraf, can you ask on my behalf? So
I think a good idea, followed by perseverance, making sure that as you go along the pathway that you're fair and just to everybody that comes along the pathway. I would like to be measured by the people. When I finish, I think the people who've come after me and how good they are will be the measurement of my success. Mm-hmm. So can we develop people from the beginning of their careers to be successful?
Okay. Do you have a mission statement that you live by?
Yeah, cure HIV would be a good one. We're actually working on that. I think reducing the impact and changing the health system. So I actually do have a mission statement, and that is build the university. So I'm quite keen to double the capacity of the Wits Medical School and change the health system. And I think the health system needs to go down the NHI path. It needs to accept the additional funding that comes with the NHI. And we need to get into governance positions to outsource.
And a broader question, I'm part of a movement called Champion South Africa. It's self-explanatory in terms of where we want to go and become this champion nation. What's the one thing we need to do as a nation to get there?
I think we have to stop corruption, right? The levels of corruption, the indecision that goes with it, the poor management that goes with it is just destroying education. It's destroying the health system. Praveen Gordhan summed it up brilliantly the other night at an ethics a talk that he gave. And basically, we have to find people whose moral fiber actually puts their own needs behind those of the job or work that they're doing.
Yeah, good point. Well, we've got about a minute to go, so I'm going to rush this with very quick questions and quick answers. Who would you like to take out to lunch?
So Kofi Annan. Because I've always admired him. He said, we need to keep hope alive and strive to do better, which absolutely. I think is sums him up very well. I'm always game to take Minister Aaron Motsoaledi for lunch.
I'm sure you would. And reconnect with a much older Cyril Ramaphosa now, I think, isn't it?
Yes.
A book that you suggest we need to be reading?
So I'd like The Tipping Point by Malcolm
Gladwell.
Yeah. So the reason why I like that is because actually in the HIV response, we need to...
To get to that tipping point.
Exactly.
So there we are. What about a good quote, inspiring quote that you'd like to share?
So I am a scholar of Rudolf Steiner, but in the one that I thought was really good was, whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. Boldness has genius, power, and magic in it. And that actually is how I feel. I feel if you're bold and you actually just go and do what you want to do.
And lastly, how would you like to be remembered?
I think as a social entrepreneur. And I think that using the principles of evidence-based medicines and innovation, moving health into the 21st century, but building it on very strong governance in a non-profit
environment. Maybe that social entrepreneur point is a way to go, because less dependence on handouts, pretty obviously, right? Well, there you are. Impressive enough to listen to you. I'm sure people have enjoyed it. And I certainly have. Professor Ian Zane, the CEO of Right to Care, and that ATE. I mean, you're probably going to rebrand this pharmacy, but it certainly works for me. I appreciate you allowing me to put you in the spotlight.
Thank you for your interest.
There we are. All right, there we are. Interesting, isn't it? We'll have a podcast up of that soon. SAFM.co.za. Time now for Radio VUCA.